to bring. Okay. Start all over. It's 4:03. We have a quorum, and I'd like to bring the December 12th Environmental Services Advisory Committee meeting to order. Roll call. Fred Ariza.
Here.
Margo Garcia. Margo?
She's on.
Muted.
Here.
Okay, gotcha. Haley Hughes.
Here.
Doug Jennings.
Here.
Trevor Ledbetter.
Here.
Susanna Shippers. Ryan Thomas is absent, and Chris Yarder here. So we're gonna jump to item three, and Maggie, we'll have you help us through the monthly finance report.
Sounds good, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, let me get my screen shared. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Let's see. There we go. All right, how's that looking? Can you see
that? A little bigger, just a tiny bit bigger, not much.
How's that?
Oh, better.
Okay. Thanks. All right. So this is the detail for Fund 502. These are actuals as of December 2nd. We likely wouldn't have gotten all of our November revenues by then. But for residential, one thing I just wanted to point out is I think we're going to be in really good shape, or we're really seeing the results of the full fare increase. You know, we phased it in, the $3 and the $3.25 for residential customers over two fiscal years. And so now we have the full fare being charged, that full $6.25 in addition to the original amount. So that's showing up nicely in our revenues. Overall, we collected $30 million so far this year, and I think we'll be around $75 million for the funds. But we'll see. We'll keep watching as we go. The for our expenditures, we have a budget this year of $71.8 million. We've expended $21 million so far. And I think we'll spend around $69 million this year, which will leave us not having dipped into our fund balance. The last time we looked, one change I wanted to point out to you from last time was that we, I had our forecast for vehicles quite a bit lower. At about, I think I had it at about $8 million. And we have been doing a deep dive, including a sort of five-year forecast of the vehicle needs for environmental services, and looking at what's on order, and also working with fleet administration on, we have a lot of things on order, even going back to fiscal year 23 that we haven't received yet, just due to supply chain delays. And quite a bit of that is going to be coming in this fiscal year. So we're going to see, I do think $11 million is high. However, I think we will be placing some orders for some light duty vehicles based on reviews that we've been doing with administrators out at the landfill, and also collections on their light duty vehicle needs as well. And those types of vehicles we receive much more quickly than when we order the large refuse, the large equipment for the, especially the trash trucks, those can take some time to receive. So I think we're at $10, $11 million for vehicles this year. And the other change from the last time we looked at this, we had $7.9 million budgeted for capital projects. Some of the capital projects that we have going this year are the bifusion building out at Los Reales. We have some updates to the administrative building at Los Reales, at the sustainability campus, the area improvements in general. Those are some of the projects that we have going. And I worked with architecture and engineering and got an updated forecast from them. So I think we're going to be spending a little more than half of our budget. So that's going to give us some nice savings for this year. Just more savings than I thought we were going to have. I thought this was going to be a little bit higher, but I think, and the other thing I wanted to point out to you is I had some transfers in of $880,000. That is the net of an amount we transfer groundwater fee money back to the HERF fund, a certain percentage, and it's usually around $200,000 a year. That will go to the HERF fund. However, we're also getting $1 million from the general fund that was approved by mayor and council to help subsidize the construction of the Bifusion building. So as soon as we've reached $1 million in expenditures there, I'll transfer that $1 million from the general fund into Fund 502 to cover that. So that's also some nice news as well.
Good.
In terms of programmatic, unless, sorry, I didn't ask. Does anyone have any questions about this report?
I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure I followed the last your last statement, where this money coming in from the general fund is showing up.
It's here, Ms. Garcia, in the transfers and adjustments. I put it in as a revenue because it's going to
Okay.
transfer in from the general fund to this fund 502 here. So
So
it's
that's, yeah.
increasing our revenues
Okay.
by $1 million.
880 is the forecast, and 200,000 was coming back to, was subtracted.
That's right, because we need to transfer a portion of the groundwater protection fee money
Okay.
over to the HERF fund.
Okay.
And we do that at the end of the fiscal year. So I netted that transfer out, which is around $200,000, and the $1 million transfer in left us with about 880.
So the HERF fund is roads, is it not? Or I have that the wrong fund?
Highway user,
Revenue fund. Yeah, that's
it might actually go into the Department of Transport. I know it goes to the Department of Transportation somewhere, and I'm not sure. It might just go into their operations. I don't know the details of
okay.
all the agreement, but I know that there was a percentage, and it's based on user amounts, a big report that I get from water, and I'm not sure what the history is on that. I just haven't been here long enough. I wish Carlos was here. He could tell us.
Okay.
Would you
Yeah.
like me to follow up on it with an email on that, just reminding everybody?
I would, because it seems strange to have groundwater going into the road funds, which is what HERF
And
is.
I could be.
And DTM is the overall transportation fund, and it, I don't know. Okay. Yes, I would like a little more explanation, if you don't mind, please.
Not at all. DTM has several funds, and I may have misspoken which fund it
Okay.
gets transferred into. So let me get back to the group on this.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Brittany, you're welcome. Absolutely. Any other questions before I move on to the next? No? Okay. So in terms of programmatically, 69.9 million dollars for Fund 502. And then one thing I wanted to point out to you regarding our forecast for code enforcement, this number is a little bit low, that we did make some modifications. I made some modifications to the forecast based on we are going to hire two contracted code enforcement officers just to assist with the backlog and to help implement just changes to the code enforcement program, the uptick in vans, vacant and neglected structures work, so to assist with that work. And So that increased our costs or estimated costs slightly, hiring those contractors. And then the other thing that increased our costs slightly was that we are actively hiring new code enforcement officers. We received, I think it was four new positions this fiscal year from that was approved by Mayor and Council for code enforcement, and we're actively filling those. And each time those folks join us, there are quite a bit of kind of upfront costs to kit them out, uniforms, safety shoes, bulletproof vests, quite a bit of vehicle supplies, those kinds of things. So this forecast, that is why we're going to it's going to actually be higher than this amount, I think, by about $200,000. And that is why we're going to be over budget. So I just wanted to, for code enforcement. And just a reminder to everyone, code enforcement activities and graffiti abatement are paid out of the city's general fund,
General.
not the enterprise fund 502.
When you hire the inspectors, are they aware that they're getting a bulletproof vest?
I think that's more policy related, so I'll let Carlos or somebody else answer that, but I suspect they do. But
It just seems incredible. I'm sorry.
I know it's yeah.
What is there
Well,
more?
I know for a fact that there are scary situations with certain people, and there are times that some of the inspectors have been physically hurt and they've had to call TPD. So,
All right. So sad we're in that situation.
it's yeah, they have to wear those for safety now, for sure.
They're on the front lines of a lot of challenging work. So, any other questions from the group?
No.
Okay.
Looks good.
One thing, just an update for you regarding the fiscal year 26 budget. We are now working on getting the requested budget together for the department. And that is due to be submitted. I'm working very closely with Carlos on that. That is due to be submitted to the city manager by the end of January. So we are working really hard to get all of our positions where we want them to be, all of our needs identified for next fiscal year. Brittany, did you have your hand raised?
Yeah, I just wanted to answer Margot's question about the bulletproof vest and if new hires are aware of that. It's actually a volunteer program, so if they
Oh.
want to utilize that and have that a part of their uniform, it is their option, but code enforcement officers are not required to wear that bulletproof vest. Same with the respirator. So it's their choice to participate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brittany.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks.
So I'm going to be working really hard for the next couple months to get the budget submitted to the city manager, the request, and then there'll be lots of back and forth and public meetings and all of the steps that happen to get us to the city manager's recommended budget to mayor and council, and then mayor and council adopting the budget for the fiscal year. So this is going to be a big 6 month. I think mayor and council generally adopts the budget at the end of June. So it's going to be a long process, but we're just getting started now.
No, we haven't met as a finance committee for a long time. Do you think it would be helpful if we did meet earlier in the year?
We certainly can. It's completely up to you. And if you'd like, we could look at a draft of what we're thinking about for the budget at that point. We can we could do a deep dive into if you were interested in spending for certain areas or certain programs, we could do that. Just depending on your interest.
Okay.
We haven't, since I've been here, I haven't been asked to attend a meeting like that. So I just would need a little direction, what sort of information you like to review, or I could just wing it and think about some things that might be of interest to you also.
And we've, Margo, we've talked about, part of that finance committee is kind of to see how ESAC can help make recommendations, to mayor and council, that sort of thing that we've done in the past, right? So think about that.
It's especially with regards to rates. That's
Yeah.
charges that we have actually in the ordinance that created us, is that we're to help with the rate structures. So, if I think we would look at the budget from the perspective of, does it require a rate increase again because of new needs or additional needs? Or I find it quite shocking that we're still trying to deal with things from fiscal year 23. Not because of the city, but because of the economic situation that we exist in. So, how does that get figured into potential rate increases? So I think that probably it sounds like end of January, 1st of February is something that we should look into having a meeting.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to jump in and join, we're always looking for more members to help out in the finance committee. So think about that if you're interested. Thank you, Maggie.
You're welcome. Thanks,
A busy beginning of the year for you. So have
everyone. Right.
a restful holiday.
Thank you so much. And the same to all of you. See you next time.
All right. So let's, Trevor, would you like to give us give your summary of our waste diversion collections and education meeting?
Sure can.
Thanks.
All right. So starting with waste diversion and our MRF report, our most recent audit showed a big increase in cardboard from September to October. Trash was also down slightly, and glass was also down. And the payment to the MRF went down by about $9,000 and came in at around $29,000, which is the lowest we've had in a long time. Mixed plastics were also up significantly thanks to us sending plastics to the new polymer facility up in Las Vegas. And so we were getting $440 a ton for 1, 2, and 5, I believe. And Brittany's pulling up our MRF report. And then the MRF also installed a new optical sorter, which might be helping with some increased weights for a few different things in there. So you can see here, 1, 2, both types of 2 and 5, we're all getting $440 a ton for plastics. Any questions there?
Let's see, the trash is sitting at also dropped. I think you mentioned that 25.4%
Yes, a
instead of
lot.
6.
Yeah.
So that helps in the excess residue storage over on the payment segment side. Not that much, only a $1,000 drop, but
Every little bit helps.
yeah.
In public outreach, as we noted in our last meeting, Christina and her team had a very busy November. The zero waste collection event went well. They're going to have another zero waste collection event on April 5th, and they've had a lot of success with that. They also had a number of outreach events between October and November, including a Ward 2 presentation on, I believe, hard to recycle plastics. And then they also presented to Margot's OLLI class, which is the Osher Center for Lifelong Learning, correct?
So did Trevor.
Yes, I also did. We came and talked about all things waste at the university. Looking forward to 2025 outreach. They're working on notifying residents about TreeCycle, which is coming up, and the holiday schedule, which is right here. Various locations to drop off used Christmas trees at the end of the season. There are also some updates to the 2025 pickup schedule, and I'll pause before I go there if you wanted to say anything here, Brittany. Just showing.
I'm just showing.
Okay, great. So in 2025, the drivers voted to only delay pickups for three holidays. So we will have normal pickups for every single week, with the exception of New Year's Eve, Thanksgiving, and Christmas Day. And those weeks will be delayed by one day. Hazardous household waste will also be in the December bill, and they're reducing the number of pickups from 12, so one a month, to 9, and they're taking off June through August. We have really low turnout, and it's also very hard on volunteers and staff to deal with the heat during those months. And then January will also have the recycling calendar in it. Recycling calendar. Brush and bulky program is the sort of on-demand program will be coming through. There was some hesitation from the city manager's office, but they ultimately said yes. So we will be piloting in area 19 and 25. Which are those areas where we have really bad illegal dumping. And really, we're hoping to minimize the illegal dumping, and education will be really important. Those areas will still get twice a year regular brush and bulky pickup, but again, you can call the number and get on demand. Those areas will also get letters, and there will be some public meetings with those neighborhoods in January just to give them all of the information associated with the new program. And area, go ahead, Brittany.
I was just highlighting the two areas just for visualization.
Perfect. Go ahead, Margo.
I'm just seeing where 19 is. There it is. She's circled it way over right on there. The east side, and 25 on the southeast. So we are going ahead. I guess I misunderstood earlier. We are going ahead with the twice a week throughout the city, but 19 and 25 can call. Is that
yes.
Right? Okay.
And it's been busy, right, Brittany?
Yeah. It hasn't actually been the lines and the ability to schedule brush and bulky pickup yet in those two piloted areas hasn't been open to the public, but the reason why those two areas are selected to move forward to brush and bulky by appointment, that's what we're moving forward to call it, is because to help prevent illegal dumping in those areas. What we see is that once it gets near brush and bulky pickup, it's just a domino effect for people to put out trash or illegal dump along those roadways. So we're hoping that without it just being a free-for-all, and when people actually need the service, it will help decrease the illegal dumping in those areas.
Okay. Chris, did you want to say something?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Moving on to code enforcement, we got some information on unlicensed peddlers. So basically folks who were out serving food without licenses and providing for some unsanitary food serving. So in mid-November, Environmental Services was contacted by the Pima County Department of Health, and they worked with Tucson Police Department to discuss those unlicensed vendors. They grouped up and went out and gave warnings the first night, and if they were still there the next day, they let everyone know that they would start citing and impounding equipment. There was no hand washing and a lot of other food handling hazards. On the second night, they closed down three places and impounded everything, and code enforcement issued several citations. The biggest thing is just people don't know what they need to be doing. They don't have licenses or IDs. And it was really helpful to have Tucson police there to help out with things. And the goal with this is to sort of shift into a twice a month situation for those areas where we have a lot of this happening, not just a one time thing. And really the goal is to get folks to do to get permits and do things safely, not to just unnecessarily crack down, but to actually, you know, make sure people are safe. In addition to that, we got some new CSOs, and a fourth was promoted to a code inspector. We currently have 11 inspectors. Lori has two with the VANS program, so we have a total of 13. And we have another one that's currently with HR, so hopefully we'll be up to 14 soon. And then back in collections, Brush and Bulky, which has been behind since our large storm at the end of July, is, at least as of last week, was almost caught up, should be caught up by now. Looks like it's a yes. So Area 13, 2 weeks ago, was completed, and it sounds like they're now caught up. They had folks on unassigned overtime, assigned overtime, and that ended on December 6th. And those folks were probationary employees, and they get to go back to regular duties with residential. In addition to that, the Environmental Services just completed an alley assessment, sort of going through all of the alleys in Tucson where we're still doing 300-gallon barrel collection to get an idea of the safety of those alleys for collections. And they sort of classified every alley as tier one, safe, tier two, could be safe but needs some work, or tier three, just not safe at all. And the goal is to get out of tier three alleys entirely as soon as possible and move all of those residents from barrel service to curbside service. Beyond that, they also have some subcontractors helping out with maintenance in certain alleys. And for those alleys where the subcontractors are coming in, they're given 2 weeks to do things themselves. If they don't do anything, the city will come in and do whatever they need to make sure that the alley is safe for collections. And then finally, Los Reales Sustainability Campus. They started to grind green waste. They contacted Fairfax, but they didn't have any units. So the city brought in a rental unit and are operating it themselves to give us an idea of whether or not we want to do that internally moving forward, or if we want to continue to contract that out. And then Bifusion, groundbreaking for the new facility out at the Los Reales Sustainability Campus. We were told January 15th from 1:30 to 2:30. Is that still accurate?
I will have to confirm with Frank. Oh, for the groundbreaking? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, perfect.
And that's going to be discussed by, that's on the agenda.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
And then glass is still getting shipped out. So far, we've shipped out about 1,300 tons this year. And we've continued moving finished compost to community gardens, the university, and ward offices and parks around the city. And that is it.
Thank you. Okay, Carlos. You're here, and we're ready to hear the director's report, starting with the EGSD staffing update.
Okay, so just want to give you an update on our staffing report, as you pointed out. So one of the key positions we've been trying to recruit for is a deputy director position. We have we had interviews last week. We essentially tendered an offer, and we're looking, because we got two very good viable candidates, to see if we can overextend really the recruitment, really to bring on board two deputy directors to help us really maneuver through all the things that we got pending, we got going on, not only just operational work, but long-term work. So that's in progress. So hopefully we can get that essentially materialized or get that taken care of, I would say before Christmas. And probably most likely, if they're onboarded, most likely will be either the first part of the year, if not soon after that. So we're very happy about that, in terms of really making some progress on that. We also have had a lot of success in terms of really posting positions. As I described a few months ago, we were not really making significant progress on posting positions. So as new leadership of HR has taken realms of the department as a whole, what they have done is essentially they pulled all the satellite human resources staff to work and report out of City Hall. They asked essentially each department really to identify what were the top priorities in terms of recruitments. Since then, they essentially have posted most of those positions. So we've been really in interviews for the past week to 2 weeks. So we had a lot of interviews this week. We have a lot of interviews next week. So a lot of those positions are moving forth. One of the ones that was just recently posted, as Trevor mentioned, one position for code enforcement. This will be the second recent round of recruitments. One of the things that was the nice things about really dusting off what positions we have is, as a matter of fact, code not only has one position, but has actually, we need to recruit for three positions, because some of those positions that were CSRs before that got promoted, we are reclassifying those back to code inspectors. So in reality, when that recruitment takes place, we should be able to bring three. A goal is really to bring three inspectors on board. And so we're making a lot of progress in terms of posting positions, in terms of going through the recruitment process, schedule interviews. So it's certainly a night and day difference what I described a few weeks ago, a few months ago. And as a result, in terms of really centralizing all the HR support that was embedded in the department, now is being centralized at City Hall. That's one of them. The other thing is really a big relief in terms of the new requirements for recruitment that were put in place earlier in the year. Some of those were evaluated, and so some of those are no longer necessary really to move forward. So that created a lot of relief for a lot of our recruitments. So that's where we at in terms of really, I don't have in front of me really how many positions we posted, but it's quite a bit. I think close to overall vacancies, close to about 20 to 25 positions that were on the queue really to fill as part of those recruitments. Still in the books today, we're looking at about 93 vacancies. So, but with those, it's going to really bring it down to somewhere around 70 positions. So we're hoping to get that taken care of, be somewhat of a stabilized format by the first quarter of the year. So we still continue to experience challenges in filling for the equipment operators. But one of the biggest things that we're seeing is really the tier pay, assignment pay. It's being communicated to a lot of the candidates. And so when they come in and interview, they're asking us for that tier pay assignment, which is another incentive pay. If you're able to operate one or more or three pieces of equipment, you get an additional assignment pay. So the word is out. And so that is really helping us bring people on board. So that's kind of the overall report on staffing.
I have a quick question. You're still sending people to the Pima College course?
So we are
commercial driving license.
Yes, Yes, we are. And that is so the way we're going about it is we have hired a lot of environmental service workers, and they, some of them have shown interest in really becoming to be operators. And those are the folks that we have sent to school, to Pima County or some of the other driving schools. So one of the things we're doing differently, and we just had our initial training this past week, is we want to create our own CDL training program. So the first step on that is it's really can we institute the train-a-trainer program. So we had an external instructor came in, trained our supervisors in terms of being CDL trainers. And that way we can start organizing some internal training really for those environmental service workers or anybody within the department or actually, as a matter of fact, within the city that wants to attain a commercial driver's license. So they'll provide them the training. And then the same individual is going to help us out do the testing. So but our supervisors, our frontline, our supervisors need to do the training. And then this gentleman or this consultant, Brian as a consultant, will come in and do the testing. And eventually the goal is that we will have our own, not only CDL training program, but also our own testing program. So almost creating an apprenticeship program for our operators. So again, that's we're hoping to put that in place. It's in place already, but I think we begin to materialize that. I'm hoping in the first quarter of the year.
Well, that's good news. Some more good news.
So you feel that by having that control, I guess it gives you flexibility and timing. So you're not waiting for the community college or someone else to start their courses, but you can start this commercial driver's license training anytime you have a person ready to do that. Is that the advantage?
That is the advantage. And that's one of the key advantages. And I think the other key advantage is it really bypasses the need really just to focus only on recruitments for operators. So this way, if we have an environmental service worker, so we're advertising for those two positions. But if an environmental service worker shows an interest in really becoming to be a CDL driver operator, then right off the bat, we can train him, we can get him tested, and they don't have to go through the class. And all of a sudden they go from being an environmental service worker to an operator right off the bat. And then we're since they're in the system, they're already applied to the city, we can just do a direct appointment into that position. So that's really, we're trying to alleviate that pinch point on that end.
And you keep using the word he, and I know that's a generalized term. Are there any women in the classes getting their CDLs?
I believe there is one lady. There's one female person that is going through the class. Yes. To my knowledge, there's one. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hey, Carlos?
Yes, sir.
When you do the training, you train the person for the CDL, then do they have to commit to like 12 months being with the city? I mean, so you don't train them and then they leave you right away?
So Doug, at this point in time, there are some departments that do that. Mm-hmm. At the moment, we're not really focusing on that for the moment. Eventually we will. But at the moment we're not putting that effort forth
You're still right. Working on getting the program going.
Right, right. Gotcha. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because some folks may see that as a disincentive that, oh, if you want me to go to the training, you're adding all those rules. So we're hoping that we can show that this is really a good place to work. It's a decent paying job. And so hopefully we'll keep them aboard. But yeah, eventually we may have to do that.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Any other questions for Carlos? No. Well, thank you. Are we going to go on next to the hard to recycle plastics
Yes.
program update?
So as you all know, we've been on this have to renew or this hard to recycle plastics for, I would say, close to 2 years. And there's a lot of stuff at play that essentially is a lot of stuff that is planned. Obviously, the building, the facility at Los Reales is one of them. How long is it going to really take for that building to be constructed? And still a very good participation from the public in terms of bringing their non-recyclable plastics to the various drop-off sites. We are still seeing a lot of material that does not meet the parameters of the Hefty Renew program. And again, we try to reiterate that this is really not an all plastic solutions. And so we were with the hopes that as we transition into this Hefty Renew program, that we made the decision, the council made the decision, or we made a decision on July 1st, that we were hoping that we would start seeing more Hefty Renew bags and more plastics, but we're not to that point. And one of the things that we need to be cognizant and be reactive to is the fact that we told residents that if you participate into the program, you bought the bags, you brought them into a center, that we were going to bail them and send them to Hefty Renew. So this week was our first week that essentially we essentially are taking our roll-offs, all of our non-recyclable plastic roll-offs to Los Reales, and then we're dumping them on the working face. Then we have staff that essentially goes through that roll-off and essentially sorts all the plastic that is on, in a Hefty Renew bag. We throw it into a roll-off, and the remaining plastic that does not meet those parameters is essentially then landfill. And reason for it is, as you may recall, one, we want to make sure that this is really only intended use is really for residential non-recyclable plastics. Two, we just can't continue to accumulate plastics more than what we have here on the landfill right now. We roughly have about 500 bales that I know when Bifusion is up and running at this facility, they're going to have plenty of material that they can process for them to get going initially. So that's want to give you an update, full transparency in terms of the spirit of intent of the program. Continue to move it along. Continue to make tweaks about it, and just to make sure that we make the necessary adjustments really to be respectful of the program and the spirit of intent of the program, and really continue to communicate that to the users that it has to be on a bag. We totally understand that there is some concern about why do I need to buy a bag to put plastic in the bag. Well, the notion is it really we got to look at it as it is a container, it is a mode of transportation, and then ultimately the bag is a mechanism really just to get the product to the end market, and by virtue of you buying the bag, it covers the cost of that ultimate use of that plastic. So that's kind of where the overall picture is. I'm still waiting. Heidi was from Bifusion was going to provide me some information in terms of what we can use, where we can ship those 500 bales to, and so that way they can get a beneficial use in the interim. I'm still waiting for that information, and that's the reason why we had to do something in the interim, because we just can't continue to accumulate plastic and not really find end uses for it.
Can I make
Murdo?
comment? Yeah. Excuse me. I did want to call out that when I last time took my orange bag, there was a group of people there helping folks. This is at Ward 6. And I forget, I think it was the Kiwanis Club. I have that correct. And so we had a nice discussion about the work they were doing and so forth to really help increase the amount of orange bags. And it's interesting to hear that those not orange bags, I'm sorry for the people who are on the face that have to hand throw those into another roll-off to go that. Is it most efficient to do it on the working face? It seems to me it'd be awfully often a safety issue as well.
Was not really in the working face, is right, it's adjacent to it, just so that way and any excess material can be incorporated into the working face.
I mean,
So that we're not having to rebundle it and put it in through the roll off is let's see through that, let's throw it into the roll off. Any excess material, let's just push it up to the side and incorporate it into the working face.
I can understand that. I mean, one sorting is bad enough, two sortings would be ridiculous. So I don't, how did that group agree to come forward? Is that something you started, or they came forward to suggest that they do that, or what's the relationship with this the Kiwanis that are there? I mean, there were like three or four people.
I think that was mostly was organized by Ward 6. They offer that service through Ward 6, so primarily is really through their office that they're organizing essentially that assistance. And that's part of their commitment on sustainability, as part of really being providing the community service, so they can they had an have an, a keen interest of doing that.
Okay, and I guess the other one is that the fact that the rest of that stuff is going into the landfill it hasn't hit the newspapers yet. Are you preparing any kind of information about the fact that that's having to be done so that you get ahead of the I gotcha news story?
Yes, Ms. Margo, we're working on that. Yes. So first we wanted to look at, is that something doable? Was it feasible? Was it practical? Can we do it? And it looks like it is. And so yes, we're going to be preparing that as well. We're preparing that information as well.
And the third thing I just wanted to comment is that the language I've put together for explaining people about the orange bag and why we are paying for it is the fact that this is essentially a sort of private recycling that the everyday recycling is paid for out of our fees for the garbage collection. And therefore, this is one that can't go into our systems at this time. So we've hired, if you will, another company to do that. And the way they pay for the costs of picking it up and taking it off and processing it is through the orange bag. So I found that people seem to be fairly willing to accept that kind of logic that it's you pay for recycling and your fees. Not all people understand that. So that's often the first discussion. And then the second is that the orange bag is then paying this private company to do that. Just some information for you.
And to your point, Ms. Margaret, had a presentation today at PAG, and a similar question came to mind. Should I put everything, all my recyclables, into the orange bag? So there's still a lot of misconception, and the answer was no. Those containers, those bottles, those are very valuable. Those milk jugs are very valuable. Those need to go into the blue bin. Anything else, your straws, your food containers, your foam, all the stuff should go into the bag. That really should be a very lightweight material. Everything else should go into the bin. So that still creates a lot of confusion, because they think it's all my recyclables need to go into this bag. It's no, not at all. It's totally different.
Yeah, that's certainly something from my class that I heard over and over again was this confusion about this. And I think when they saw the MRF report and the $440 for these per ton for these other plastics, that very much encouraged them to put it into the blue barrel as opposed to putting it into the orange can.
Yes.
Carlos, do you want to take a moment to introduce Chris? I didn't get that far. Or
Chris.
Not
Chris is on.
the other Chris.
Oh, so yes, LaFour.
Sure. Christopher forum. He I can't, let me see, Chris. He threw me a curveball. So Chris from LaFour, he works at currently at the city manager's office. He's been assigned as a project manager that oversees the BioFusion project. He's really taken the lead on really not only developing, but really the project itself, but really just essentially not only from a project management perspective, but also from a program management perspective. He's going to be in the next few weeks. He's going to be joining our team. He's going to be part of our team, and his focus is still going to be a lot of the sustainability efforts, a lot of the programs. So welcome, Chris, and welcome to ESAC. And I don't know if you want to say something on your end.
Thanks, Carlos, for putting me on the spot. I was planning on listening in today just as a silent audience member to kind of start to learn who all of you are as ESAC and how your meetings work. My background is I've been with the city for 11 years. Most of that, about 10 years, was with Tucson Water, and with that enterprise, I was an intergovernmental coordinations analyst, And I did a lot of work in my time with Tucson Water as a staff liaison for the for CWAC. So I do have some background in coordination with utilities and city boards and working on various initiatives and projects. And as Carlos said, I'm wrapping up my time here in the city manager's office and looking forward to joining the team over at EGSD and getting to work with all of you.
Thank you, Chris.
Great.
Thank you for the curveball, Brittany.
I'm sorry. I thought he was listening in for Bifusion. He's helping us plan by the Bifusion groundbreaking
Ceremony,
event.
yes, uh-huh.
Well, and I did, there was a notification from the city, and I saw your name on it for the January 15th, and I did think to myself, who's that? So it is
Now you
nice.
know.
It's nice to meet you. Yeah.
I have to admit that I was cut off here for a second. I missed the first part of Chris's his introduction. You look familiar to me. Did you work at the Star?
Hi, Fred. I did. I worked at the Star in the late 90s and the early 2000s. I was on the StarNet desk
That's what it is.
for several years. So it's good to
Yeah.
see your face.
Well, your hair is much shorter now. Mine's much grayer.
That's a lot of years.
Too many.
Oh, okay, that's good to know for us old timers. So, all right. I think we can move on for future agenda items. Can't remember what I was supposed to add.
So, Ms. Chair, one of the things, and this is really a point of suggestion from staff, it would be you received, or it was posted as part of the call to the audience last meeting,
Right.
the report that was prepared by Sustainable Tucson on the After Renew program or the Hard to
Okay.
Recycle Plastic. So, I don't know if you want us to really to take a look at it and provide you pretty much our not so much our perspective, but just really just kind of a rally evaluation or report and how we can use it, how we can really take a dive and see what we can really move forward with some of those recommendations or really what their findings are. So if there's any interest to you,
Okay.
we submit it
Yes.
to you, we can certainly take a look at it and maybe provide you an overview in terms of work. How does that really that report translate to the work we're doing or
We
the
do,
stuff that
yeah.
we're not doing?
Because we all got the report to read over from when he was here. It's still accessible on the Sustainable Tucson site. And so you might find that real interesting to read over.
Have you read it, Chris? Jane?
Yes. Yeah. So that's something to go through. I tap into their site every now and then just because I'm nosy, so I just want to see what they're doing. So
And another item I had for the agenda was one of the things that came up in the class was that there were a lot of people in the class who were from the county, and they really would be interested at some, talking to get about trying to get coordination and message about recycling, about waste management region wide, as opposed just to the city versus waste management or what some of the other companies, so a Republic. So I know at one time there had been some talk about having some meetings. I think it would be interesting to have a report if there's any progress on that, there's any interest in moving forward with that, or I know there's a lot on your plate, but it would be something I think that the and then perhaps having a press release on what happened from that, because There certainly is a lot of interest from non-city residents in what's happening and having issues with what the messaging is and what belongs to them and what is appropriate to them and what isn't.
Okay. Anyone else have any suggestions for our next meeting?
Mario, I do have that request for waste diversion. Is it okay if we start there?
Sure.
Okay.
I just think we need to keep it in front of us. You know, it's one of those things that's not going to go very quickly. So, you know, maybe once a year visit the topic or something, you know, but no.
Heather, did you have something?
Yeah, and it may be connected to the suggestion from Carlos, but we do have some businesses in town that encourage refillable products. So you can go in and bring in a shampoo bottle and fill it up instead of buying a new bottle of shampoo. We do have a few in town. I don't know if there's a way that we can support them. I don't know if the city's allowed to endorse a business, but if we can get the word out regarding how to avoid plastic in the first place, that might be a good thing to talk about.
Okay.
Idea.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, there's no item six, call to audience. And so, boy, we're getting out of here earlier than usual, but that's all good. Anyhow, it's the end of the year. And so I hope everybody has a good, happy, restful holiday season, and we'll see you next year.
Thank you,
All right.
Chris. Next
And
year.
just to note, waste diversion is on January 1st.
Right.
So
That's going to be a good time.
so
No,
we'll
we're
actually
not doing
postpone the waste diversion meeting for until February. We'll reconvene in February.
Oh, so you're
Yes.
canceling the meeting.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that's wise. Okay, it's 5:01. Have a good night.
Thank you. You guys take
Happy
care. Enjoy your holidays. Take
holidays.
care. Bye-bye. Happy
Happy New
holidays.
Year.